Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and Digesting Politics is back for the fall campaign season. It's our weekly podcast where Andrea Bernstein, Bob Henley, and I discuss politics over lunch. Digesting Politics is a web-only feature not heard on the radio. You can sign up for free at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And it's not just Friday. It's Follow-Up Friday, where we dig a little deeper into some of the interesting things that came up briefly during the week. And as you know, all this week we've been discussing the coming flu season, and in particular, the pros and cons of the swine flu vaccine. Vaccines in general make many of you uneasy, as exemplified by Leah in Carroll Gardens, who called into Monday's show. Here she is, and then about a minute of my exchange with that day's guest, Dr. Orly Avitzur, a medical advisor to Consumer Reports. Take a listen.
One of my main concerns about the vaccine at this point is this, that the fact that they have this, thimerosal that with the mercury in it that they're using as preservative in this particular vaccine that I believe is not generally used in the regular flu vaccine. So that, of course, raises big red flags for anyone that's carrying a fetus around.
They're doing that because of some of the skepticism, but actually mercury-free vaccines are available. You just have to ask for one.
So they are using thimerosal, which is the thing that some people suspect of causing autism in some children. This is being used in the swine flu vaccine?
I believe it is, but that I know for sure that they do have mercury-free vaccines available. So if you are concerned, you can get one. And there's really little or no data to really confirm that link.
There's been no study that has confirmed that
link. No, it's all anecdotal evidence. And, of course, this gets people very excited. But there has been no confirmed data to support that.
Though the argument I hear on the other side sometimes is that they haven't proven at all, found any evidence for anything that's causing the increase in autism in the current generation, and so therefore they can't rule anything out. So that was for Monday's show, and that little caveat at the end got a few people on our comments page going. For instance, Ben from Brooklyn wrote, "Brian, how could you end the segment there saying there's no proven link between thimerosal and autism, but the link hasn't been disproven either? Thimerosal was dropped from virtually all pediatric vaccines in 2002. If there were any link between thimerosal and autism, the autism epidemic would have abated by 2007. It didn't." And Jerry from Highland Park also wrote on the comments page, "Numerous epidemiological studies rule thimerosal out for autism. Remove the thimerosal in various countries, and the apparent rate of autism continues its trend upward. If thimerosal were the cause, the rate should go down. Epidemiology has excellent tools for ruling in and ruling out, and these have been critical to various medical discussions." So let's follow up on what is often an emotional and contentious topic: autism, vaccines, and thimerosal. With us now is Roy Richard Grinker. He does research on autism at George Washington University, and he is the author of Unstrange Minds, Remapping the World of Autism. And he's working on a new book on autism coming out later this year from Basic Books. He's also the father of a child with autism. And Professor Grinker, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
So let me begin specifically on the thimerosal question. Was I incorrect in saying that the link hasn't been proven, but it hasn't been disproven either?
Well, to some extent, you were correct. I don't think that we can ever prove that something doesn't cause something else, particularly when we're talking about vaccines. There will never be a study comparing autism in vaccinated versus unvaccinated populations, because it would be unethical to deprive children of vaccinations.
Sure, but what about looking retrospectively, as those two listeners who posted did? If thimerosal has been phased out and autism rates have continued to rise, why wouldn't that be proof enough?
Well, I think it is proof enough. but it's not proof enough to completely disprove some of the hypotheses that are out there. The thing that is really at issue here is there any biologically plausible theory, any biologically plausible mechanism whereby this preservative that has not been in vaccines for about 8 years now could cause this very complex genetic, largely genetic disorder, autism. And there really doesn't seem to be any mechanism that anybody can come up with. You know, science moves usually very, very slowly. But in this case, science moved extremely fast to basically say, look, there's no link between vaccines and autism. And we have done so many studies of vaccines and autism, it's time to really put our money elsewhere in more promising leads.
Do you happen to know if there are other reasons to be wary of thimerosal? It is still a mercury-based additive, whether it's linked specifically to autism or not.
No, I don't know of any reasons to be wary of it. The mercury, the kind of mercury that's in thimerosal, is a mercury that's pretty easily excreted from the body compared to the kind of mercury that has caused major mercury poisonings in the world. And in addition, there's really no relationship between true mercury poisoning and the symptoms of autism. People with mercury poisoning have smaller heads. People with autism have larger heads. People with mercury poisoning have vision restrictions. People with autism don't. On and on. The symptoms don't match each other. So it's for some people quite almost an irrational belief. And I have to say that within mainstream science, the hypothesis of a link between vaccines and autism is pretty much dead.
Do you have an alternative mechanism for what's causing the spike in autism in this generation? You said there's no plausible mechanism by which thimerosal would be causing it. Is there any that science has right now, or is it still just a total mystery?
Yeah, well, I don't believe that there is a spike in autism, and we have no scientific evidence from epidemiologic studies to suggest there's been a true increase in the incidence of autism. We don't have any incidence data to suggest that. The fact
you think
that
it's just being better diagnosed?
Oh, I wouldn't use the word just at all for anything like this because it's overdetermined. That means there's just huge numbers of factors that account for things. You know, epidemiology is not just about counting numbers. It's about figuring out characteristics of populations. It's about how you come up with very different rates with slightly different methods. We know that autism rates are significantly higher in wealthier school districts that have autism programs. It's higher among whites because they get diagnosed earlier, because they live in urban locations where they have access to major medical centers. It's higher among people who have a regular doctor and who have health insurance. So we know that autism rates will vary considerably depending on where you live, the kinds of doctors you have, the methods that are used. You change one little method, you can get a big change in the rates. And we've seen that in South Korea, which I can tell you about.
And we don't have time for that, but sure enough, we saw a report from the Department of Health and Human Services this week, I'm sure you noticed this, that concluded that about 1 in 100 children have an autism spectrum disorder, which is up from the previous estimate of 1 in 150. So they see it
right.
as on the rise.
No, they don't. They see prevalence is on the rise. The prevalence is a snapshot of how many people at a particular point in time appear to fit those categories. And so just because you have, say, a prevalence in year one of, say, 1 in 150, and then in year three you have 1 in 100, doesn't actually mean that there's an increase in the true number of cases. It can be an increase in the number of diagnoses. It can be the increase in the or a decrease in the age of diagnosis so that you have more children in your pool. I actually see the 1 in 100 as kind of good news because for the last 10 years, epidemiologists have been saying if you could really capture all the kids with autism and the whole spectrum from the severely challenged to the more able, then you would come up with about a 1 in 100. They've been predicting that since 1998, 1999, both in the United States and the U.K. The fact that we're there now, I think, is something of an achievement.
One last thing. You probably heard in the clip that we played from Monday's show, the doctor who advises Consumer Reports said that the swine flu vaccine is available without thimerosal, though some versions of the swine flu vaccine do have thimerosal. If it's so controversial, why not phase it out altogether for something like this, as it apparently has been phased out for childhood vaccines? Any idea?
Well, you'd have to ask the FDA or a vaccine manufacturer about that. But preservatives make it possible for vaccines to be administered in an economically feasible way, so that you can have big vials of rather than single vial doses to give out. So I think the costs of not having a preservative in vaccines would probably be pretty significant.
Richard Grinker does research on autism at George Washington University. He's the author of Unstrange Minds, Remapping the World of Autism, and working on a new book coming out later this year. He's also the father of a child with autism. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.